This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's time for Law and Behold, our ongoing series aimed at improving constitutional literacy among Malaysians, done in collaboration with the Malaysian Bar and the University of Malaya's Faculty of Law. So last week, the Malaysian Communications and Multimedia Commission, or MCMC, with the cooperation of the Royal Malaysia Police, they detained several suspects for allegedly spreading fake content on social media about the 2019 novel coronavirus outbreak. So since it's stated in Article 10A of the Federal Constitution that every citizen has the right to freedom of speech and expression, today we're going to explore the constitutionality of those arrests with Firdaus Husni, the Chief Human Rights Strategist at the Malaysian Centre for Constitutionalism and Human Rights, and also with Ki Hui Yi, a member of the Bar Council Constitutional Law Committee and an advocate and solicitor at Kanasalingam & Co. Welcome, ladies. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good to have you both on the show. So last week, you know, about six people were arrested here in Malaysia. That's so far, of course, for spreading fake news on the NCOV virus, right? And media reports have stated that they will be investigated under Section 233 of the Communications and Multimedia Act, CMA 1998. Can you tell me a little bit more about this act?
Okay. So we have in place what it's called the Communications and Multimedia Act, CMA, the short form. And the whole act, the purpose of that act itself, in a bigger picture, is to try to have a national policy where it concerns communications and multimedia industry. And when you talk about the industries, you look at having a commission. So we do have a multimedia commission in place. What are their powers and functions? It's all spelled out in the Act. We look at the licensing and regulatory, regime concerning the industry. To know that, it's also, again, in the Act. Where it concerns content that uses the communications and multimedia, to either publish, to either spread content and distribute this content. These are all regulated under CMA.
Okay.
So if we want to be more specific, you mentioned earlier that there were a few people arrested under Section 233.
That's
now,
right.
Specifically that Section 233, it talks about what is called the improper use of network facilities or network services. So as you can see, it's quite broad. Whatever that uses network facilities, whatever online platform, it can all fall under this. And what it says here is that anyone, by means of any of these facilities or network services or applications, if they make or create or initiate the transmission of information regarded as comment, requests, suggestions, or any other form of communication, if it's regarded as obscene or indecent or false or menacing or offensive in character with the intention to annoy, abuse, threaten, or harass another person.
Right.
Yeah, this is just an example. One can be considered as committing an offense.
Right.
Yeah. So what I see here is that these people are arrested with what's happening at the moment. It is very much under this phrase of false communication.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And, you know, we're talking about fake news here, right? And is that a problem, especially in Malaysia? Is that difficult to actually define and assess? You know, how do we even define fake news in the first place here in Malaysia?
Okay. So if we look at the Anti-Fake News Act 2018, which has now been repealed, under Section 2, previously, the fake news was defined as any news, information, data and reports which is or are wholly or partly false, whether in the form of features, visuals or audio recordings or in any form of suggesting words or ideas. They are defined as fake news. So when one looks at it, one wonders what kind of things or forms of things that are not fake news, what are not news. So to answer a question, I think the definition is definitely very broad. which is why there were a lot of criticisms when the act was put in place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, and what were, I mean, because we do know that that was passed by the government of the former PM, Najib Razak. Many people said it was designed to stifle dissent or criticism of the government of that time, you know. And of course, this happened just before they lost the elections in May 2018. So as you mentioned, it's been repealed. But what were some of those criticisms that were leveled at the Anti-Fake News Act 2018?
So I'll add to that. And this, you know, very much relates to the challenges in defining fake news in the first place. One, for example, when we look at the legal environment in which the Anti-Fake News Act 2018 was passed, yes, it was before the election. That was once. And it was also at the height of the 1MDB scandal.
That's right.
Yes. And so it was against this background that the Anti-Fake News Act was passed. And so you can't really fault the masses for thinking that it was because of a political agenda,
right.
Not exactly to encourage responsible exercise of freedom of expression. I do not think so. So that's one. And I would say what goes to the very heart of the problem with Anti-Fake News Act is that no one party, not even the government, should have a monopoly of the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because here, the government is putting it on themselves to decide which are truths, which are not.
Exactly.
Yeah? And even without Anti-Fake News Act, even with, let's say, for example, the other existing laws that has been used to attack information, the exercise of freedom of expression, for example, even with these laws, you can already see challenges. If you don't define where it's not clearly defined, then it would be left to the government to do that job.
Mm.
And when that is the case, you will see selective application those existing laws. And that has happened. So why is it political news has more scrutiny, but other kind of news, for example, or news concerning, for example, the minorities, the Shia community, the LGBT community, when they make police report, there's no action taken against that. So
right.
those are criticism that it has been raised by the civil society as well.
Okay, all right.
I think I would like to add on to that. I think the problem is with the word fake.
Mm.
I think there are also problems where, you know, it's just a different perspective to a certain piece of information, even with statistics. I think if we look at recently in Singapore, they also started using this similar legislation. And I think the opposition party who actually challenged the so-called corrective notice by the government, because in Singapore, we can talk about it later, the government actually would issue like a notice to tell you that whatever you have said is actually wrong. Can you please correct it? So that's kind of like what's happening there. But the opposition was actually saying, we are just putting up a different perspective of what you are saying is actually not fake.
Mm-hmm.
So and also, I think it is also unfair in the sense that sometimes the information or the news released by the government may be late. It might not, you know, it's so hard to say whether it's true or not. It's just that at this moment, the citizens have no access to the information.
That's right.
If the government later on actually release the so-called information, which, you know,
like strongly
now
worded
become
as such.
It's true, then but you have already charged the person for releasing fake news. So it's something that is one of the biggest problems with this piece of legislation.
It sounds very tricky, and I mean, like, I'm sure we're going to talk about, you know, other countries as well later. But just looking at Malaysia, for example, you know, are there provisions under other pieces of legislation that, you know, can also be used to target those accused of publishing or disseminating fake news?
Okay, yes, there are. So we've talked about Anti-Fake News Act and the fact that it has been repealed, but that does not mean, you know, any false news can now be, you know, freely disseminated. Spread without any consequences. They are, although they are, I guess, there have been debates about even about this existing provision. So the arrests, those are under Section 233 of the Communications and Multimedia Act, for example, news considered false. So that's one. Under the Penal Code, specifically Section 203 and also Section 505, B. So 203 talks about false information in which the information is about the fact that an offence has been committed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that has been used, from what I remember in the past, during the height of the 1MDB scandal, a report was made, and this section has been used or considered to be used because the information, the report was about the fact that someone has committed an offence.
Mm-hmm.
So for that, civil society, some activists has also raised the fact that this particular section is not supportive for encouraging freedom of expression. Yeah, so that's one. And then 505B, and this is the section that is used now in the arrests, in the current arrest,
okay,
because this section is essentially regarding people who makes, publishes, or spread news with the intention to cause public alarm.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's okay. 505B. So these offences carries penalties and or imprisonment. Other than that, we also have what it's called under Section 499 of the Penal Code, criminal defamation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, this also has raised concerns by the civil society because under the civil law, we already have defamation.
That's
so,
right.
For example, you know, if Juliet says something about me and, you know, it goes viral,
mm-hmm,
yeah, I can sue you. Yeah.
That's right.
So, and that's a private, what you call a private action,
mm-hmm,
where I, as a private individual, take action against you. And it's up to me. I can claim for damages for, I don't know, 1 million, 2 million, for example. Yeah. But that's a civil action. Under the Penal Code, it provides for criminal defamation, which civil society is saying it's too much.
Mm-hmm.
when it can also be stifling to the whole, you know, need to encourage freedom of expression.
Okay. Yeah. So, because, I mean, those processes also can be dragged out for a long time in court,
exactly,
isn't it? It's for me to prove my case, even if I need the money, I need the means to be able to do that as well, isn't it?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Firdaus Husni. She's the Chief Human Rights Strategist at the Malaysian Centre for Constitutionalism and Human Rights. And also with Ki Hui Yi. She's a member of the Bar Council Constitutional Law Committee. She's also an advocate and solicitor at Kanasilingam & Co. And we're discussing free speech and fake news, you know, because some Malaysians were actually arrested last week for spreading fake news. So we're trying to find out how constitutional that is. And we're going to continue that discussion after this quick break. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today are Firdaus Husni. She's the Chief Human Rights Strategist at the Malaysian Centre for Constitutionalism and Human Rights, and Ki Hui Yi, who's a member of the Bar Council Constitutional Law Committee, and she's also an advocate and solicitor at Kanasilingam & Co. And we are having our Law and Behold series, our 19th episode, and we're talking about free speech and fake news. So, you know, just before the break, Firdaus, you were talking about some of the provisions under other pieces of legislation can be used to target those accused of publishing and disseminating fake news. And one I think that we're quite familiar with here at BFM is the Printing Presses and Publication Act. I mean, that too can be utilised, am I correct?
Yes, that's right.
So under the Act, Section 8A actually so-called attacks the media, whoever publishes any false news, the printer, the publisher, the editor and even the writer can be found guilty of this offence. And if you are convicted, you can be sent to prison for a term not exceeding 3 years or to a fine not exceeding 20,000 ringgit, mm-hmm, or both.
Okay. That's quite a lot.
Yes.
But, you know, fake news, it's such a global phenomenon. And I mean, okay, so we've got all this legislation in place, but how are other countries around the world dealing with this? And I want to call it a monster. It's become quite a monster. We've lost elections, you know, we've put despots into power through it. But so how are they actually dealing with it?
Okay, so yes, I agree that fake news is a global phenomenon. But I think we need to correct a perception here in that when you talk about fake news, this is not a new phenomenon.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about, you know, the world wars. Those, if not started by fake news, I don't know what else. It's just that term has been popularized by the current, US president. And then I guess, you know, that you could say spark a worldwide conversation about fake news, mm-hmm, when the whole idea itself has, you know, existed long ago and been utilized by you could say governments all over.
I guess also the spread of it is just so much easier now. Maybe that's the difference as well,
yes,
right?
I think that's true. Yeah. With the advent of, you know, information technology and such.
Right. So, as I mentioned earlier, in Singapore, last year they passed a legislation. It's called the Protection from Online Falsehoods and Manipulation Act. It's very mouthful.
I mean,
unlike our anti-fake news act. Okay. Right. So, in Singapore, it is also, to put it briefly, it is also up to the government to determine what is fake news. And if you are found guilty of, you know, spreading so-called fake news, you can go to jail for up to 5 years or fine up to $550,000. Right. So it's something very severe, which has also sparked a lot of criticisms in Singapore. If we look at, France, in November 2018, they have also passed a fake news law that empowers judges to stop the spread of fake news during election campaigns. So, you know, if we look at it, of course, fake news, or we call false news, is not something new. Mm-hmm. But the sudden spark of, you know, legislations passed all over the world, we can see a similarity or coincidence. It's always been passed nearing, say, election. So I think this is something that, as Ms. Firdaus mentioned just now, something that, you know, it creates uneasiness amongst the civil societies.
Sure.
And you know, why not back then? Just why now? Why, you know, 3 months before the election, the government suddenly is so concerned about, you know, you want the citizens or voters to make an informed decisions. What about, you know, in the past?
That's right.
Yeah.
So again, it goes back to that whole, it sounds like it was designed to stifle any sort of criticism or dissent, right?
That's right.
Okay. And repression and dissent, silencing aside, there of course does exist a potential threat to democracy and society from various actors, you know, who are creating these fake news and also disseminating it anonymously using social media. So, I mean, how do we even draw the line? You know, it's like to me, it's like a monster. You know, how do we actually get this monster sorted?
Contain
this monster. That's the word I was looking for.
Okay, so this is a big question. This is the big question. So when we talk about democracy, you know, the whole idea of nurturing a democratic society and a democratic government is where they are rule of law. And when you talk about rule of law, you talk about rights, you talk about a vibrant and open market of information, of ideas. Yeah, and this, you know, at the same time, open instances for fake news. And I think we can't deny that. That's one. But as to the question of where do we draw the line, I think if I can rephrase this question a bit, I would say who should be trusted to draw that line? Because here, that's the problem here. I think we also have to shift our mind that not all solution here can be solved by law. Yeah, especially when you want to talk about creating a society that effectively enjoy and exercise freedom of expression. Mm-hmm. And so let's look at other stakeholders here, other key actors here. When you talk about dissemination of information, you have the media organizations, you have the social media platforms, you know, Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and of course the users as well. All of these key actors, yeah, should, and I know they also are already playing a role in making sure that, you know, this fake news monster can be contained. Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. Facebook, they have taken steps in what is called a verification of news. Mm-hmm. And there are also certain NGOs out there which have been set up solely for the purpose of fact-checking.
Right.
And social media provider are collaborating with these organizations. And that, to me, that is one way in which there is no, you know, little to no government intervention or restrictions, but instead it is for these key actors to work together. Mm-hmm. So what they did, and this is one model that I think maybe we can think of, that this Facebook partner with this NGO, and what they did is that the NGO will do the fact-checking and with other sources as well, whether that certain piece of news is collaborated with from other sources. And if it is not collaborated, yeah, they'll give a certain kind of rating. For example, 90% possibility that this is fake news.
Ah, okay.
And so where that is the case, then what Facebook would do is they would reduce the amount of circulation of that piece on the, you know, Facebook portal.
Interesting.
So that's
the rating system.
Exactly.
Almost.
And of course, not just Facebook, other social media also, we can now report where we see that these are false news. The users can report. So why don't we educate our users to be responsible users where, fake news are identified?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. And second, earlier we talked about the advent of information and technology. And, you know, studies say because of that, we can, you know, read news just by scrolling, and that takes less than a minute, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what that has done is to create what you call lazy thinkers or lazy society. How many of us actually look at the headlines and say, oh, that's the news of the day, I've done, you know,
or
my
comment.
Quota of news.
Yeah, yes. Or just comment based on just reading the headlines.
Exactly. Right? Not realizing that more than half the time, these are clickbaits.
Mm.
And more than half the time, the news do not reflect the headlines. Oh, the other way.
That's
the
right.
other way around, yeah. And so this is what we can educate. And there's a lot of ways to, you know, do that verification by the users. We can talk about this more later also.
Okay. But, you know, do you think that the spectrum of harm caused by fake news, that's also extremely broad, wouldn't you say? And I feel that leads to a legitimate question on whether these cases need to be dealt with via the law, which is something you said maybe not all the time, right?
Mm. And so what civil society is concerned about is while we acknowledge that there is a need for the government, you know, to contain news where there is a real likelihood that it would lead to public, you know, chaos.
Or death.
Yes, there is recognition of that. But at the same time, you really have to, you know, I guess it's a fine balance to draw here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how you recognize that need, but it has to be stringently applied or restrictively applied so as not to be abused. And so you don't have to, you know, end up in a situation where, you know, you want to talk about an ant that's annoying you, but you're taking a whole battalion just to crush that one ant. You can't do that. And that in itself will, of course, stifle freedom of expression, where, for example, someone raises legitimate concerns, legitimate questions.
That's right.
Yeah. So if you're going to say that we're going to bring the whole, you know, army just to crush you because of that legitimate question that you raise, then nobody's going to raise any questions. And that's not what we want.
Yeah, but, you know, you mentioned the marketplace of ideas, you know, and we are living in that open marketplace now in this 21st century. I mean, should everything be allowed? You know, there has to be some restrictions and protections put into place as well, right? And I think the key question here, of course, is something that both of you have mentioned. Who does the restricting? Because in Singapore, for example, it's obviously the government, correct? And, you know, how fair is that in that sense? And how is any form of dissent allowed to be aired if everything you say is immediately, you know, the law is brought down on you?
Okay. So when we look at the laws, where Malaysia is concerned, of course, it's the Federal Constitution of Malaysia, specifically under Article 10, 1A. Yeah, that guarantees every citizen the right to freedom of speech and expression. Yeah, but if you read further under Article 1(2), Clause 2, mm-hmm. Basically says that this law is not absolute. Yeah, and it can be restricted.
That's right.
On the grounds of, for example, security of the Federation, friendly relation with other countries, public order, morality, for example. Yeah, where it concerns contempt of court, defamation, or incitement to any offence. So, yes, there are that restrictions.
Mm.
But when you look at these restrictions, the next question that you should ask is the laws that we have, for example, the CMA, penal code provisions, are they wide enough that everything can fall under that?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer to that is yes, then we have a problem. So that's within the Malaysian context. If you want to talk about the international standards and principles, yeah, even the international human rights law recognizes that there cannot be an absolute freedom of speech. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So Yes, you're right. They cannot be a totally open, unrestricted market of ideas.
Yeah.
Yes. They can be restrictions, and these restrictions under Article 19 of the ICCPR, it even lists out what are those restrictions. So, for example, it says here that where it concerns the rights or reputation of others, that's one. Where it concerns protection of national security, public order, public health, mm-hmm. you know, as in this arrest,
that's
for
right.
example, or morals. So, like I said, these are the grounds of restrictions. Next questions, is it restrictively only on this ground, or is it wide enough that it open itself to abuses mm-hmm. by authorities? Yeah.
Okay. All right. And I guess, you know, some of the questions that I did hear coming up, especially when these six Malaysians were arrested, you know, that's censorship of their free speech. I mean, so how do we then draw that line between what we see as my right to say what I want to do and that question of basically becoming the source, you know, of conspiracy theories and falsehoods? Because again, this is what probably happened in this situation, for example, right? Maybe they did think that was the truth, but they didn't bother to verify it, for example. So, you know, how do we draw that line between, you know, my rights and what is actually allowed, I suppose?
Okay. Well, my take on this is that, say if you're put in a position of a possible defamation. Mm-hmm. So if I say something against a hospital for, say, not being truthful or for failing to treat, or for example, where did I get that information? Did I get it from a friend of the cleaner of the hospital? You know, is that your verification?
Mm-hmm.
And if you put yourself in that position, for example, if the hospital were to sue me, truth can be a justification to defamation. Will I be able to justify what I said? Will I be able to prove the truth of what I said?
Mm-hmm.
That's one way.
Okay.
Yeah. So my take here is that before we say anything, and it is important to state here that, you know, this whole thing about fake news, at the end of the day, people shouldn't be discouraged from exercising their freedom of speech and expression. If people are discouraged, if people are getting fearful to express when it is a legitimate concern, for example, mm-hmm. then we have a problem with the existing legal framework. So to me, that is where you draw that line. It's okay. Not an easy exercise.
To add on to that, of course, many people will also fight for freedom of
speech,
expression. But on the other hand, the public at large is also thinking about, what about my right to receive accurate information?
Right.
So interestingly, if we look at the law, in our constitution, there's no specific article which says that, oh, you know, you are guaranteed a right to get whatever information that you are getting, they are all correct.
Mm.
In our constitution, unfortunately, there's none. But if we look at case law, in Sivarasa case, the federal court judge, Gopal Sriram, at that time, he actually says that Article 101A, where Fidel's talked about just now, it also covers a right to receive information by the citizens. So in another case, Haris Ibrahim and SPRM, where Haris Ibrahim was trying to get information about the delimitation of the constituency at that time, he was asking for the information and SPRM refused to give that information.
Mm-hmm.
So the counsel in that case actually argued that there is a constitutional right to information. But of course, the court rejected it. The court said that unlike, say, India, or they have Right to Information Act, or, you know, in Canada, they have the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So in other countries, they have this kind of legislation that guarantee a right of the citizen
mm-hmm.
to get information. But again, the question we are talking about here is the information you are getting, the correct information, the accurate information.
Mm.
So, you know, it's a very, I would say, very vague idea, if we put it. It's also a very difficult question for the court to decide whether you should be given such right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's very hard for legislators then, isn't it? I mean, they need to be deliberate in approaching any regulation on fake news, I suppose.
Okay, so here's what I think when we talk about legislation. Yeah, we should try not to resort to knee-jerk reaction when you talk about, you know, not just fake news, but, you know, any other issues, really. So, but especially when you talk about fake news, rather than having a law to contain published fake news, yeah, let's look at why fake news thrive in the first place.
Right.
Why conspiracies thrive in the first place? Because there are limited information from the official sources out there. Mm-hmm. That's how it thrives. So, what the conversation that we should start here is an open government. An open and transparent government where accessing information
data.
Of public concern, of public interest, accessing data is not going to be, you know, an impossibility or a very restrictive and complicated process.
Mm-hmm.
If we have an open and transparent government, yeah, in which data, it's not something that, you know, you have to wait for weeks on end, and if you're lucky, then, you know, this fake news, to me, will be the trickle-down effect is that the fake news will be less of a concern because you can safely rely on the official sources.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And easily point it back to
exactly,
that.
Exactly.
Okay, all right. Just looking back at these six arrests, right, you know, I think MCMC, they've noted it's quite hard to do it. But, and I know people have been saying, like, if I'm spreading something that was given to me, you know, can I also be arrested by that? I mean, that was just a legitimate question that somebody asked and they wanted the lawyers to answer.
So when you look at the law, it doesn't only talk about the offense of publishing, but also spreading, disseminating. So
that's
you
right.
can.
So don't spread fake news.
Yeah. The term fake news itself is problematic.
That's true. Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess the best thing to do before you spread it is to try your best to verify it,
exactly.
Right?
So this is not original. So this is not me, you know, not just from me, but, you know, I'm sure countless of sites or sources dedicating to, you know, how do you tackle fake news have talked about this. So for example, if you read headlines that makes you angry.
the
quicker it makes you angry, the more you should be skeptical and critical of that news. So that's one. And
I'm
second,
in trouble.
And second, of course, read the whole content. Yeah. So that's number two. And I would say number three, understand the whole business model of, you know, social media platforms, of media organization. It's a business at the end of the day. And so news, sentences, headlines are worded in a certain way that it engages you, yeah?
Triggers you.
That it triggers you. It can even divide you. And so be mindful of that as well. And another way also, you look at the author of a certain news. You look at the media organization which it was published on.
Mm-hmm.
Are these reliable? Have you heard of, you know, this author and this news organization? That's one way. And see whether there's any other sources that corroborate that same content, same information.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see that, for example, none of this checks out, then as it is us, as the users, yeah, in our quest to demonstrate that we can be responsible users and smart users, we report, you know, where mm-hmm. we verify that this is fake news. So this is all steps in which we ourselves can just do at the comfort of our armchair.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess, again, just, you know, keep calm and verify your facts.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I think just one last thing when we talk about the anti-fake news law. I think before this, the public was very angry. People have said that, you know, the authorities have been abusing the law by arresting activists or even politicians on the other divide to keep their mouth shut mm-hmm. about different perspective or criticisms against the government, whichever side you're on. So, but right now, we are in this situation because of the coronavirus. people started talking about, yeah, it seems like a good legislation. You know, we are getting fake news all the time in my family group. My aunt just sent me something talking about, you know, don't go to this place because they're going to arrest people there, you know, for not wearing masks and things like that.
Oh my
so,
God.
You know, these are things that we are getting. And people started thinking, oh, you know, it's actually not bad. So I think, again, what we are trying to say is that in Malaysia itself, even before the Anti-Fake News Law, Anti-Fake News Act, we already have enough legislations that we talked about just now to kind of counter fake news, whether there's really a need to have an extra piece of legislation to arrest more people, to punish more people. You know, that's one thing. And also we have to look at the punishments, jail term, the amount of fine, 10,000, 50,000, do you think that is proportionate to whatever you have done or you have said? So these are things that we should ask ourselves. And also when the legislation is there, it's anti-fake news law, I think around the world, it has not been used in a way where we want it to be used.
Okay.
So if you get what I mean, right?
Yes. Okay. All right. So we do need a lot of work in that area, I suppose. But I'm sorry. I'm afraid we are running out of time. But thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Firdaus Husni, the Chief Human Rights Strategist at the Malaysian Centre for Constitutionalism and Human Rights, and Ki Hui Yi, who is a member of the Bar Council Constitutional Law Committee. And she's also an advocate and solicitor at Kanasalingam & Co. And we were talking about free speech and fake news and, you know, whether we can, whether it's constitutional to be arrested for speaking your mind here in Malaysia. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Law and Behold interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and you can also find us on Spotify. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.